We can't find them or catch them. So that if they don't return of their own free will, we must do without. We started on our own feet, and we have those still.
Feet, said Gimli. But we can't eat them as well as walk on them.
He threw some fuel on the fire and slumped down beside it. Only a few hours ago you were unwilling to sit on a horse of Rohan, laughed Legolas. But you'll make a rider yet.
It seems unlikely that I shall have the chance, said Gimli. If you wish to know what I think, he began again after a while, I think it was Saruman. Who else? Remember the words of Éomer. He walks about like an old man hooded and cloaked. Those were the words. He's gone off with our horses, or scared them away, and here we are. There's more trouble coming to us, mark my words.
I mark them, said Aragorn. But I marked also that this old man had a hat, not a hood. Still, I don't doubt that you guess right, and that we're in peril here, by night or day. Yet in the meantime, there is nothing that we can do but rest, while we may. I'll watch for a while now, Gimli. I've more need of thought than of sleep. The night passed slowly. Legolas followed Aragorn, and Gimli followed Legolas, and their watches wore away. But nothing happened. The old man didn't appear again, and the horses did not return. Chapter 3
The Uruk-hai.
Pippin lay in a dark and troubled dream. It seemed that he could hear his own small voice echoing in black tunnels, calling Frodo, Frodo. But instead of Frodo, hundreds of hideous orc faces grinned at him out of the shadows. Hundreds of hideous arms grasped at him from every side. Where was Merry? He woke. Cold air blew on his face. He was lying on his back. Evening was coming, and the sky above was growing dim. He turned and found that the dream was little worse than the waking. His wrists, legs, and ankles were tied with cords. Beside him Merry lay, white-faced, with a dirty rag bound across his brows. All about them sat or stood a great company of orcs. Slowly in Pippin's aching head, memory pieced itself together and became separated from dream shadows. Of course, he and Merry had run off into the woods. What had come over them? Why had they dashed off like that, taking no notice of old Strider? They'd run a long way, shouting. He couldn't remember how far or how long, and then suddenly they'd crashed right into a group of orcs. They were standing listening, and they didn't appear to see Merry and Pippin until they were almost in their arms. Then they yelled, and dozens of other goblins had sprung out of the trees. Merry and he had drawn their swords, but the orcs didn't wish to fight, and had tried only to lay hold of them, even when Merry had cut off several of their arms and hands. Good old Merry! Then Boromir had come leaping through the trees. He had made them fight. He slew many of them, and the rest fled. But they hadn't gone far on the way back when they were attacked again by 100 orcs at least, some of them very large, and they shot a rain of arrows, always at Boromir. Boromir had blown his great horn till the woods rang, and at first the orcs had been dismayed and had drawn back, but when no answer but the echoes came, they'd attacked more fiercely than ever. Pippin didn't remember much more. His last memory was of Boromir leaning against a tree, plucking out an arrow. Then darkness fell suddenly. "I suppose I was knocked on the head," he said to himself. "I wonder if poor Merry is much hurt. What has happened to Boromir? Why didn't the orcs kill us? Where are we? And where are we going?" He couldn't answer the questions. He felt cold and sick. "I wish Gandalf had never persuaded Elrond to let us come," he thought. "What good have I been? Just a nuisance, a passenger, a piece of luggage. And now I've been stolen, and I'm just a piece of luggage for the orcs. I hope Strider or someone will come and claim us. But ought I to hope for it? Won't that throw out all the plans? I wish I could get free." He struggled a little, quite uselessly. One of the orcs sitting near laughed and said something to a companion in their abominable tongue.
"Rest while you can, little fool," he said then to Pippin, in the common speech, which he made almost as hideous as his own language. "Rest while you can. We'll find a use for your legs before long. You'll wish you'd got none before we get home."
"If I had my way, you'd wish you were dead now," said the other. "I'll make you squeak, you miserable rat."
He stooped over Pippin, bringing his yellow fangs close to his face. He had a black knife with a long, jagged blade in his hand.
"Lie quiet, or I'll tickle you with this," he hissed. "Don't draw attention to yourself, or I may forget my orders. Curse the Isengarders."
"Ogloka bagrong sha pushdog saramong globuko sky."
He passed into a long, angry speech in his own tongue that slowly died away into muttering and snarling. Terrified, Pippin lay still, though the pain at his wrists and ankles was growing, and the stones beneath him were boring into his back. To take his mind off himself, he listened intently to all that he could hear. There were many voices round him, and though orc speech sounded at all times full of hate and anger, it seemed plain that something like a quarrel had begun and was getting hotter. To Pippin's surprise, he found that much of the talk was intelligible. Many of the orcs were using ordinary language. Apparently the members of two or three quite different tribes were present, and they couldn't understand one another's orc speech. There was an angry debate concerning what they were to do now, which way they were to take, and what should be done with the prisoners.
"There's no time to kill them properly," said one. "No time for play on this trip."
"That can't be helped," said another. "But why not kill them quick? Kill them now. They're a cursed nuisance, and we're in a hurry. Evening's coming on, and we ought to get a move on."
"Orders," said a third voice in a deep growl. "Kill all but not the halflings. They're to be brought back alive as quickly as possible. That's my orders."
"What are they wanted for?" asked several voices.
"Why alive? Do they give sport?"
"No, I heard that one of them has got something that's wanted for the war, some elvish plot or other. Anyway, they'll both be questioned."
"Is that all you know? Why don't we search them and find out? We might find something that we could use ourselves."
"That is a very interesting remark," sneered a voice, softer than the others but more evil. "I may have to report that. The prisoners are not to be searched or plundered. Those are my orders."
"And mine too," said the deep voice. "Alive and as captured. No spoiling. That's my orders."
"Not our orders," said one of the earlier voices. "We've come all the way from the mines to kill and avenge our folk. I wish to kill and then go back north."
"And you can wish again," said the growling voice. "I am Ugluk. I command. I return to Isengard by the shortest road."
"Is Saruman the master of the Great Eye?" said the evil voice. "We should go back at once to Lugbor's."
"If we could cross the great river, we might," said another voice. "But there aren't enough of us to venture down to the bridges."
"I came across," said the evil voice. "A winged Nazgul awaits us northward on the east bank." "Maybe, maybe. Then you'll fly off with our prisoners and get all the pay and praise in Lugbor's and leave us to foot it as best we can through the horse country. No, we must stick together. These lands are dangerous, full of foul rebels and brigands."
"Aye, we must stick together," growled Ugluk. "I don't trust you, little swine. You've no guts outside your own sties. But for us, you'd all have run away. We are fighting Uruk-hai. We slew the great warrior. We took the prisoners. We are the servants of Saruman the Wise, the White Hand, the hand that gives us men's flesh to eat. We came out of Isengard and led you here, and we shall lead you back by the way we choose. I am Ugluk. I have spoken.
You have spoken more than enough, Ugluk, sneered the evil voice. I wonder how they would like it in Lugbor's. They might think that Ugluk's shoulders needed relieving of a swollen head. They might ask where his strange ideas came from. Did they come from Saruman, perhaps? Who does he think he is, sitting up on his own with his filthy white badges? They might agree with me. With Grishnak, their trusted messenger, and I, Grishnak, say this. Saruman is a fool, and a dirty, treacherous fool, but the great eye is on him.
Swine, is it? How do you folk like being called swine by the muckrakers of a dirty little wizard? It's orc flesh they eat, I'll warrant.
Many loud yells in orc speech answered him, and the ringing clash of weapons being drawn. Cautiously Pippin rolled over, hoping to see what would happen. His guards had gone to join in the fray. In the twilight, he saw a large black orc, probably Ugluk, standing facing Grishnak, a short, crook-legged creature, very broad and with long arms that hung almost to the ground. Round them were many smaller goblins. Pippin supposed that these were the ones from the north. They had drawn their knives and swords, but hesitated to attack Ugluk. Ugluk shouted, and a number of other orcs of nearly his own size ran up. Then suddenly, without warning, Ugluk sprang forwards, and with two swift strokes swept the heads off two of his opponents. Grishnak stepped aside and vanished into the shadows. The others gave way, and one stepped backwards and fell over Merry's prostrate form with a curse. Yet that probably saved his life, for Ugluk's followers leapt over him and cut down another with their broad-bladed swords. It was the yellow-fanged guard. His body fell right on top of Pippin, still clutching its long, saw-edged knife.
"Put up your weapons," shouted Ugluk, "and let's have no more nonsense. We go straight west from here and down the stair, from there straight to the downs, then along the river to the forest, and we march day and night. That clear?"
Now, thought Pippin, if only it takes that ugly fellow a little while to get his troop under control, I've got a chance. A gleam of hope had come to him. The edge of the black knife had snicked his arm, and then slid down to his wrist. He felt the blood trickling onto his hand, but he also felt the cold touch of steel against his skin. The orcs were getting ready to march again, but some of the northerners were still unwilling, and the Isengarders slew two more before the rest were cowed. There was much cursing and confusion. For the moment Pippin was unwatched. His legs were securely bound, but his arms were only tied about the wrists, and his hands were in front of him. He could move them both together, though the bonds were cruelly tight. He pushed the dead orc to one side, then hardly daring to breathe, he drew the knot of the wrist cord up and down against the blade of the knife. It was sharp, and the dead hand held it fast. The cord was cut. Quickly Pippin took it in his fingers and knotted it again into a loose bracelet of two loops and slipped it over his hands. Then he lay very still.
"Pick up those prisoners," shouted Ugluk. "Don't play any tricks with them. If they're not alive when we get back, someone else will die too."
An orc seized Pippin like a sack, put its head between his tied hands, grabbed his arms and dragged them down until Pippin's face was crushed against its neck. Then it jolted off with him. Another treated Merry in the same way. The orc's claw-like hand gripped Pippin's arms like iron. The nails bit into him. He shut his eyes and slipped back into evil dreams. Suddenly he was thrown onto the stony floor again. It was early night, but the slim moon was already falling westward. They were on the edge of a cliff that seemed to look out over a sea of pale mist. There was a sound of water falling nearby.
"The scouts have come back at last," said an orc close at hand.
Well, what did you discover? Growled the voice of Ugluk.
Only a single horseman, and he made off westward. All's clear now.
Now, I dare say, but how long, you fools? You should have shot him. He'll raise the alarm. The cursed horse breeders will hear of us by morning. Now we'll have to leg it double quick.
A shadow bent over Pippin. It was Ugluk.
Sit up, said the orc. My lads are tired of lugging you about. We've got to climb down, and you must use your legs. Be careful now. No crying out. No trying to escape. We have ways of paying for tricks that you won't like, though they won't spoil your usefulness for the master.
He cut the thongs round Pippin's legs and ankles, picked him up by his hair, and stood him on his feet. Pippin fell down, and Ugluk dragged him up by his hair again. Several orcs laughed. Ugluk thrust a flask between his teeth and poured some burning liquid down his throat. He felt a hot, fierce glow flow through him. The pain in his legs and ankles vanished. He could stand.
Now for the other, said Ugluk.
Pippin saw him go to Merry, who was lying close by, and kick him. Merry groaned. Seizing him roughly, Ugluk pulled him into a sitting position and tore the bandage off his head. Then he smeared the wound with some dark stuff out of a small wooden box. Merry cried out and struggled wildly. The orcs clapped and hooted.
Can't take his medicine, they jeered. Doesn't know what's good for him. Aye, we shall have some fun later.
But at the moment, Ugluk wasn't engaged in sport. He needed speed and had to humour unwilling followers. He was healing Merry in orc fashion, and his treatment worked swiftly. When he'd forced a drink from his flask down the hobbit's throat, cut his leg bonds, and dragged him to his feet, Merry stood up, looked pale but grim and defiant, and very much alive. The gash in his forehead gave him no more trouble, but he bore a brown scar to the end of his days.
"Hallo, Pippin," he said. "So you've come on this little expedition too. Where do we get bed and breakfast?"
"Now then," said Ugluk. "None of that. Hold your tongues. No talk to one another. Any trouble will be reported at the other end, and he'll know how to pay you. You'll get bed and breakfast all right, more than you can stomach."
The orc band began to descend a narrow ravine leading down into the misty plain below. Merry and Pippin, separated by a dozen orcs or more, climbed down with them. At the bottom they stepped onto grass, and the hearts of the hobbits rose.
"Now straight on," shouted Ugluk. "West and a little north, follow Lugdush."
"But what are we going to do at sunrise?"
said some of the northerners.
"Go on running," said Ugluk. "What do you think? Sit on the grass and wait for the white skins to join the picnic?"
"But we can't run in the sunlight."
"You'll run with me behind you," said Ugluk. "Run, or you'll never see your beloved holes again. By the White Hand, what's the use of sending out mountain maggots on a trip only half-trained? Run, curse you, run while night lasts."
Then the whole company began to run with the long, loping strides of orcs. They kept no order, thrusting, jostling and cursing, yet their speed was very great. Each hobbit had a guard of three. Pippin was far back in the line. He wondered how long he would be able to go on at this pace. He had had no food since the morning. One of his guards had a whip. But at present the orc liquor was still hot in him. His wits, too, were wide awake. Every now and again there came into his mind, unbidden, a vision of the keen face of Strider, bending over a dark trail, and running behind. But what could even a ranger see except a confused trail of orc feet? His own little prints and Merry's were overwhelmed by the trampling of the iron-shod shoes before them, and behind them, and about them. They had gone only a mile or so from the cliff, when the land sloped down into a wide, shallow depression, where the ground was soft and wet. Mist lay there, pale glimmering in the last rays of the sickle moon. The dark shapes of the orcs in front grew dim,
and then were swallowed up.
"'Aye,'